This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. How does a non-believer write a piece of religious music? If he's a man of the theater, he finds the drama in the words and, in the case of a Requiem Mass, the story of the Last Judgment and the promise of redemption. Giuseppe Verdi's specialty was verismo, or true-to-life opera, and for him, nothing could be truer to life than the end of it. The genesis of Verdi's Requiem is curious, touching, and complicated. The story begins with the death of Rossini in November 1868. Verdi proposed that Rossini's hometown of Bologna should sponsor a composite Requiem Mass featuring music by 13 of Italy's most eminent composers, including, of course, himself. The Mass was written, but the director of the Bologna Opera refused to make his orchestra available for a project that would bring no income. So, the performance never took place. Verdi had contributed the final section, the Liberame. He was angry that the work was not performed, but he got on with his life. Then, in May of 1873, Alessandro Manzoni died. Poets are no longer national heroes, but by the middle of the 19th century, Manzoni had become the most revered figure in Italian public life. Aside from his poetry and novels, which became, in effect, dictionaries for the emerging Italian language, Manzoni was also held in extra literary regard. He had long been a fervent supporter of Italian independence and unification, and in 1861 he had, along with Verdi, become one of the first senators of the newly founded Kingdom of Italy. Verdi loved both Manzoni the artist and Manzoni the man, and he offered to compose a requiem for the first anniversary of Manzoni's death. Nothing else in Verdi's career proceeded more urgently. To him, the most important task was to make a worthy monument to the man who represented what he called the purest, the holiest, the loftiest of our glories. What Verdi offered his and Manzoni's public was not a mass for the church, but a drama for the concert hall. And that's how it was accepted from the moment it moved from its premiere at St. Mark's across the street to La Scala and to the halls and theaters of Paris, London, Vienna, Berlin, and New York. Audiences clearly understood the secular nature of this religious music. They applauded at nearly every opportunity. Like all Requiem Masses, Verdi's opens with the sentence, "Grant them eternal rest, O Lord, and let everlasting light shine upon them." Four solo soprano voices detach themselves from the chorus, and their prayer is like a sigh. But it is the strings who carry the burden of perpetual light. The voices retreat, but then step forward again with greater force. Next comes the prayer for mercy, Kyrie eleison, Christe eleison. This is where the solo voices are heard for the first time, assertive and full of character. Tenor, bass, soprano, and mezzo present themselves formally, one by one, with maybe just a little hint of competitiveness. Verdi's correspondence makes it clear that he was looking for singers with the power and fantasy to project character and situation. It takes everything they can muster to set the scene for what comes next, the Day of Wrath, Dies Irae. Composers are great scene painters. You don't need to go to Egypt to find out what the Nile is like on a hot summer night. Just listen to Act 3 of Aida. The tremendous noise at the start of the Dies Irae sets this scene vividly. Trilling flutes, the skidding clarinets and bassoons, the percussive accents of drums and winds and plucked strings, the half-whispering of the chorus, all these people the landscape with a crowd that gradually falls silent in terror. Near and far, the last trump is announced. And the soloists, as individual men and women, speak the hopes and fears and pleas of the people at the moment of judgment. The bass's haunting solo speaks to the astonishment of death and nature when creation defies science and experience to rise again at the summons of the judge. The mezzo sternly describes the great book in which all things are contained. Verdi actually added this dramatic scene after finishing the rest of the piece. It was originally set as a choral fugue. At the height of the terror, the tenor, mezzo, and soprano seem to cling to one another for support. Their questions disappear into silence. Then the basses of the chorus hail the king of awesome majesty, Rex Tremende, with the tenors timidly repeating the words of their invocation. And out of this grow the pleas for salvation. The most touching portion of the Dies Irae, perhaps because it's the most personal, is the prayer to Jesus. Recall that I am the cause of your journey. Let it not have been in vain. Verdi sets it as a tender duet, and for a single unforgettable moment, the two women's voices become one. All voices join together to bewail the day of tears, racking breathless tears wept by the women soloists and the instruments of the orchestra. The chorus is silent in the offertorio. For a long time, we hear only the three lower solo voices. Verdi is saving the soprano for a special moment. That moment is the turn from dark to bright, from the bottomless pit to the appearance of St. Michael, the standard bearer, who will lead the faithful into the holy light. The soprano joins the other solo voices, and for a second or two, her high E hangs in the air alone. Then it's joined by ethereal violins in what turns out to be just a momentary glimpse of transcendence. The Hostias brings another transcendent moment. In the score, Verdi instructs the tenor that the music must be calmo e dolcissimo, calm and most sweet, and that the vocal ornaments are to be slow and spacious.
Sanctus, Sanctus, Sanctus.
The Sanctus is introduced by trumpets and singing herald angels. It is both an exaltation and a virtuoso fugue. The Agnus Dei begins like medieval plainsong. With soprano and mezzo unaccompanied. The mere task of staying in tune makes this one of the most difficult sections of the entire piece. Their solo is followed by a set of five variations, with the last one spinning itself out as a brief and contemplative coda. Lux Aeterna, Eternal Light, is a trio for the mezzo, tenor, and bass soloists. Against a softly glowing background of divided violins, the mezzo sings of the everlasting light, with the bass solemnly reminding us of the burden of Requiem Aeternam. When the text comes to the vision of the blessed dead lodged with thy saints forever, the woodwinds and high violins set up an angel wing flutter. If you're a fan of Verdi's operas, you'll recognize this as the sound of his death scenes. In the offertorio, when Verdi wrote a trio for the three lower voices, it was to set the entrance of the soprano in high contrast. In the Lux Aeterna, he does it to give the soprano a rest before the Liberame, a dramatic solo to rival any of his operatic scenes. The soprano declaims the text in accents of terror, and the agitation in the orchestra reminds us why we should feel that terror. The terrifying music of the Dies Irae returns, but so does the calming music that opened the Requiem. The soprano and chorus share a beautiful moment a cappella, and the music soon disappears into near silence. But then the devil reappears. Centuries ago, this chord was known as the Devil's Interval, and Verdi uses it to recall us to the world of terror. The music rises to an impassioned climax, with the soprano reaching a high C, and then sinks to a moving close with quiet chords of C major, through which first the soprano, then the chorus, reiterate their plea, Liberame, deliver me, O Lord. Verdi's Requiem was nourished by opera, unimaginable without opera, yet it's not an opera. Verdi spent most of his life in an often frustrating search for good texts. He wrote, "I want a beautiful subject, original, interesting, with fine situations, and impassioned, passions above all." Death, resurrection, eternal life. None of Verdi's poets ever approached his ideal more closely than the authors, whoever they were, who contributed to the Roman Mass for the dead. The result was, in every sense of the word, one of the most dramatic works ever written for the concert hall. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.